You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday the 14th of June and I'm Gary Boyson coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg, and I'm standing in for the indomitable Simon Brown this morning. Today I'm chatting to Peter Major around the commodity supercycle. Then we're going to also chat to Tim Jacobs, the multi-choice CFO, and of course pick up on their recent strong results, but I'm really more interested in seeing how the group is positioning itself to fend off international competition. Finally, we'll be chatting to Brian McMillan from Investec. They've got a new structured product out, but I'm also interested in getting a sense just how this industry is developing over the last couple of years. In the morning headlines, we've got Business Day. The Rand is at its had its worst week since February. This is really coming from the inflation fears that we saw in obviously after the U.S. inflation numbers last week. On MoneyWeb, SA has extremely bright economic prospects, according to Roelof Botha and Azhar Amin, both prominent economists. I think just talking about the commodity supercycle, which is also going to be interesting, obviously, with Peter Major coming up. Obviously, morning markets this morning. We've got the U.S. was slightly stronger on Friday. JSE also a little bit firmer. We've got the Rand obviously a little bit weaker, and gold price slipping a little bit down about 0.7 at the moment. I think let's move to Peter Major. So chatting to Peter Major now, obviously a renowned commodity analyst from Mergence Corporate Solutions. Morning, Peter. Thank you for your early morning time. I'm particularly interested in your view on how your view on the constant headlines that we're getting around the commodity supercycle. Of course, you know, we've got commodity prices soaring, and they did taper off slightly in May. I'm going to start with a difficult question. Where do you see commodity prices currently? Are we too high, or is this just the beginning?
No. I think we're a long ways from the beginning. I think we're more close to the end, because everybody defines a commodity supercycle differently. Do you call it a supercycle because the prices hit all-time highs, or do you call it a supercycle because it's gone on now for many, many years? And to me, a supercycle must be when you've done both, and that's what we've done here. Most commodity prices, most metal prices, they bottomed in about 2001, 2002, maybe some in 2003, and almost all of them have been falling since 1981. So that's 22 years of pretty much annual price falls. But since this millennium took off, 2002, 2003, all these prices have run, and almost everyone is up multiples of their low point. And many of them are hitting all-time highs. So you can say this commodity boom that we're in, it's been running since 2003. That's 18 years. And a lot of these commodity prices are at all-time highs, and some of them are at multiples of previous highs. So I think about any definition you want to use for a super cycle, we've been in it these last 15 years, but I don't know, can we go another year? I definitely don't think we can go another 2 or 3 years. It's just going to trigger too much upheaval and inflation, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that's it. Where, you know, if it was to continue, where would that demand actually be coming from? So, I mean, obviously we've had, you know, the kind of robust demand coming out of China. But, I mean, is this going to be, you know, India really industrializing? Is it going to come from Africa? You know, it's difficult to see, you know, where that demand is going to come from. So I suppose my next question is, obviously you look at the mining companies in a lot of detail. Is there enough? Are we going through the typical mining cycle where, you know, with the higher commodity prices now, this is when the mining companies are overinvesting in new shafts and bringing on new production, and we're naturally going to get a glut of commodity as that demand just cannot keep pace? Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, let's see. You've kind of asked me two questions here. Where is the demand coming from? That's a great question, because a lot of the world is now synchronized. It was led with China. China came out of this COVID virus first, but the U.S. is coming out of it rapidly now. Europe's starting to come out of it. East Asia's been coming out of it. So the whole world has this pent-up demand for commodities, because it was operating on less than half its cylinders during the lockdown of the last 18 months. So we got synchronized demand, and I think that's what's pushed all these commodity prices just this last year. Is there was a little bit of a lull, and now everybody's just grabbing because they can't get stock. And the mines all cut back production during this lockdown last year. But will that demand continue? I don't think so. I think it'll trigger inflation. People worry about inflation, and it was kind of an artificial super demand. Now, your next question is, can the mines increase production? Good question. And no, they can't really, because it takes a long time to build a mine at a certain capacity, and it takes not quite so long to add to that capacity. So our platinum mines, they can't just turn a dial and put out even 20% more PGMs. Maybe with a lot of work, they can put out 10% more. Iron ore producers, they can maybe put out 10%, but to put out 20%, no. They need to spend a lot of money and time, and I've never seen mining companies so restrained in adding production as in the last few years here, the last 5 years. They are not adding production because they're worried about this cycle going down, and then they're caught again.
Okay. That's great. So I suppose we've got probably 1 minute left. Your favorite mining stock on the JSE at the moment, obviously, as you say, not increasing production, but just from a valuation play, where would you be allocating capital currently?
Man, that is a tough question. They are so diverse, and I kind of base most of my stocks on the commodity price. And because I think all these commodity prices are too high, except maybe uranium, yeah, I'm probably looking at a uranium stock.
Interesting. Okay, great, Peter. Fascinating. Thanks for your time this morning. Good to chat to you.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown.
On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Gary Boyson standing in for Simon Brown this morning. Next up, we're speaking to MultiChoice CFO Tim Jacobs. Tim, thank you very much for the early morning time. First, I think congratulations just on a very solid set of results. I'm sure it wasn't an easy year. It's definitely not an easy year for anyone. And while people might say, you know, pay TV is fantastic and you know, people were stuck at home, so what else could they do? I think anyone that was running a business knows just how difficult it was in terms of not just things like load shedding, but also just making sure staff were safe. So, I mean, a robust set of numbers, growing your subscribers. I think, first of all, congratulations. But just, you know, maybe if you can just take us, you know, quickly through how you found, you know, operating the last year.
Yeah, thank you very much. Firstly, I think your analysis is 100% correct. It always looks easy, but it never is. Residential, we got a bit of a tailwind from residential customers. The lockdowns in the early part of the financial year in March 2020, and then coupled with kids staying at home, obviously gave us a bit of a boost. So we started off with a good base, and we managed to keep those through the year. But at the same time, if you think about, for example, advertising revenue, when we lost sport for a good part of the year, that created a number of problems. Firstly, we lost advertising revenue. Secondly, our premium base, some of those premium customers who are very sensitive to to preferences like, for example, rugby. We saw some churn and downgrading from the premium packs. And then, of course, all of our commercial customers, so this is the hospitality sector, was quite severely impacted by the fact that they were in lockdown and people just stopped, really reduced their amount of travel and holidaying that they did.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you know, looking at the results, I mean, subscription still makes up, you know, the bulk of your guys' revenue. But as you say, advertising, you've also got partnerships as well. I'm kind of interested to see how you guys are positioning yourself going forward. I mean, obviously, you made that acquisition of BetKing as well. So, I mean, there is, obviously the changing nature of your revenue model. But, you know, given Netflix's recent announcement that they're opening Netflix.shop to try and almost sell extra products around the site to generate revenue to kind of bring them in line with maybe what Disney's doing with Disney Plus. Where does this leave MultiChoice? How are you guys seeing that the landscape shifting over the next couple of years?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think that the first most obvious thing that everybody will be aware of is that consumer preferences are shifting towards more OTT and internet services. But in Africa, there is kind of a time lag. So while we see that this shift being very aggressive in first world markets where connectivity is very strong and data prices are cheap, in Africa, it kind of almost plays out in slow motion. And what we're expecting is that over a number of years, this, you know, this access to the internet with cheaper data prices and access to broadband will change. But in the meantime, you know, the most efficient and the most cost-effective way to distribute, for example, long-form media is still via satellite and our DTT network. So that will still form a core part of our business. But what we are doing, as you will have noticed, is that we are adding and we are being an aggregator of key service providers and key content providers. So the likes of a Netflix, a YouTube, and Amazon Prime at the moment. And I'm sure that that list will expand over the next coming years. Then the second thing that we're doing is we're looking at developing our own OTT services. So Showmax is our product. And of course, we launched last year Showmax Pro, which includes sport. And we think over time that will gain some traction. And then the third element is we're looking at adjacencies. In other words, how do we firstly consider that we've got a customer base of almost 21 million customers? That translates into about 100 million users. And how do we start to service those customers better with additional products? So many people won't know that we've got about 2 million Dakota insurance customers. And we've now added funeral cover and some debt waiver products. So that will be rolled out into the market. And then, of course, we're expanding our ecosystem through BetKing, as you've mentioned.
Yeah. So really, I mean, spreading out of kind of the general content creation and all of that. So, you know, kind of two points I want to pick up on there. Obviously, you mentioned, you know, Africa, the little bit of a lag in Africa. How much is Africa an opportunity for MultiChoice? Do you see South Africa really as a springboard into Africa and Africa the next big kind of growth phase of the business? Or is it more the distribution of services, as in selling different products to existing subscribers in South Africa?
So I think it's a combination of both. I think that we still see a significant opportunity. Remember that Africa is a very young continent. We've got a young and growing population, unlike in many other places in the world. And we still think that long-form video has still got a lot of legs, and there's a big addressable market, especially outside of South Africa, where the growth opportunity we still believe is big. And then, of course, there's also the adjacency. So the way we're thinking about this is it's not about one or the other. It's about being able to drive both growth opportunities at the same time.
Okay. And then obviously the regulatory environment in South Africa also plays a big role. You know, the idea that, you know, you have to deliver a certain amount of local content. I mean, again, with other content providers like Netflix, we've seen almost the idea that government should be subsidizing local content for them. You know, hard barriers being put in place saying this is how much you need to develop, this is how much you need to invest in South Africa. For MultiChoice, I mean, the regulatory environment, I mean, I think it was the top of your chairman's letter, you said a stable regulatory environment is important. I mean, you know, what kind of challenges are you facing with regulations locally? Or is it an opportunity, I suppose?
Yeah, so I think it's a combination of factors, right? So the first thing is that we, you know, we've worked in a regulatory environment for a long time, and, you know, we have absolutely no problem with regulation per se. I think sometimes the challenge is how regulation is executed. So, for example, your comment about, you know, local content, we produce a significant amount of local content, but imposing content quotas on the total amount of content that you produce, it doesn't seem logical, and it's just going to impact consumers negatively. So it's not about the regulation per se. It's more about how it gets implemented. And there we try to help and assist the regulators in understanding the dynamics of broadcasting so that we can come up with the right types of regulation. And of course, the other thing that is important to us is that it's an even playing field. So, you know, if we're going to be regulated, then we believe that all people in the market should be regulated, including the OTT providers.
100%, which sounds very fair. I'm going to have to leave it there. Thanks for the time this morning.
Investors now have a final opportunity to invest in a Section 12J investment by the 30th of June. To learn more, join MoneyWeb's editor Rayk van Niekerk with Jaltek's Gaurav Nair and Jonty Sachs as they unpack and highlight their top-performing Section 12J investments in a free webinar on Tuesday, 15 June at 12 p.m. Register for the webinar on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb, business and investment insights.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Next up, I've got Brian McMillan, head of structured products at Investec. Morning, Brian. Thanks for waking up early and coming joining us on the show. It's obviously you've got a new structure out, which I'm kind of interested to hear a little bit about because it's very linked to the emerging markets, and I kind of want to understand the rationale behind it. But before we start, I think just for the listeners, you know, can you just take us through, you know, what is a structured product and when is it appropriate for people?
Sure, Gary. Thanks very much. So I think the structured products have been around in South Africa for the last 20 years odd. And we've seen probably from 2010 onwards really a growth in that market. And essentially what it is in South Africa anyway, is very much linked to equities and providing downside protection or capital protection. And we do that by means of taking an index, for example, and then making it a term product. In other words, it'll be 3, 4, or 5 years long. So the investment is designed to be held for that amount of time. And by doing so, what we do is we place a large portion of the investor's money into essentially bonds, which provides the capital protection, and then make use of options to provide the upside to a particular index. And we've really seen a surge in these the take-up of these. As markets have become more expensive, people are looking for capital protection. But most people realize that, you know, with these low interest rates, you have to have some sort of equity in a portfolio. So we believe that by using these structured products, you can actually get the best of both worlds. You have the capital protection on the downside, and you have the opportunity to take part in the upside of equities.
Yeah, 100%. So looking at the current note that you guys are delivering, you know, essentially it looks like you've got 30% downside protection. This is linking to an emerging market index, which I want to get your take on why you've selected that. But you're going to get 30% downside protection, and then you're going to get a digital coupon of 22% on the upside if the index is flat or positive. So it kind of creates this almost enhanced index where you get a little bit extra if it's fallen, and then you get a little bit extra if it rises. But if it rises past the 22%, you get full upside as well. So maybe do you want to just take us through, you know, the idea behind selecting the emerging market index as your potential backing? I mean, it's obviously very China weighted. It looks like it's about 37%, you know, exposed to China, which is obviously, you know, China's had a very, very difficult year in terms of their index performances. So, I mean, the idea behind selecting this specific index?
Sure. So, Gary, over the last few years, we've really been successful in linking to developed markets. You know, things like the S&P 500, Euro stocks, and the FTSE, and so on. But you know, we found after the COVID crash of last year, the recovery in developed markets was very pronounced. And so, looking at that, we've been looking for different indices. You know, where do we find value in this market? And currently, the emerging markets are trading at about a 30% discount to developed markets. So we think that as the vaccine rollout takes place in some of the less developed countries in Southeast Asia, in South Africa, Latin America, that those countries should do well, and that linked to the fact that they're very much export markets, and they'll be playing into the hands of the developed markets who will be coming out of this sort of COVID thing. We expect that there's some value there in the emerging market space.
And I suppose that's it. So when you know, looking at structured products from, I mean, multiple providers, I mean, we analyze a lot of them over time. You know, many people link to developed market index, you kind of get the sense that the risk is actually lower, but it's probably the wrong way of thinking about it. It seems like this note, you're specifically taking on Barclays credit risk. So I mean, that's the back of the note. But yeah, with kind of the increased volatility in emerging markets, that should probably result in a higher payoff at some point. So kind of if you're going to have 30% downside protection, does it make sense to want an index that is a little bit more speculative, because you're almost lowering the risk of the product by creating that capital protection and taking on the credit risk rather instead? Is that the right way of thinking about it?
So I think, you know, with that index over time, it has been quite volatile. It's had periods where it's grown, you know, over a four-year period, which is how long this product is. It's had returns in excess of 200%, but it's also had downsides, you know, over the last 20 years where it's had drawdowns of 50%. So we think it makes sense to add a level of capital protection. And then, of course, the digital return, which you talked about earlier, means that if the index is only up slightly, you will get a 22% return. Now, remember, that return is in U.S. dollars as well. So even though you buy it on the JSE with your rands, we convert it into dollars for you, and you have a U.S. dollar investment for the term of the product. At the end of the term, we'll convert the rand, the dollars back into rands at the prevailing rate in 4 years' time. So not only do you get this exposure to emerging markets, but you also have it in hard currency.
Yeah, so it sounds great. Thanks a lot for your time, Brian. That's the show from this morning. A lot of fun. Hopefully Simon enjoyed his time off and hasn't chewed his fingernails off. But yeah, the show is live every weekday from 6:30 a.m. Obviously, we've got the takeover shows this week, and Wednesday's a public holiday. I think everyone's going to be looking on Wednesday at those FOMC minutes coming out. But from tomorrow, we will have Kia taking you through the markets. Should be fun. Simon normally does a poll, but today we're just going to call it because obviously we've got the different guests every day. Podcast will be available from 7 a.m. onwards. I hope you listen in tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.